Hey, what's going on? It's At The Letters for Tuesday, April 5th, 2022. Arden Swelling and Ben Nicholson Smith, our producers, are Nick Andrade and Christian Ryan. You can reach us at the letters at sportsnet.ca. You can listen to ATL wherever you get your podcasts. You can check us out on YouTube. You can check us out on sportsnet.ca. Ben, plenty to talk about, and it like actually is just dawning on me right in this very moment that recording a podcast at 9:05 a.m. on the final day of spring training may come back to bite us. Actually, I could pretty much guarantee there's going to be some sort of news that's going to come out later today that we're not going to get to. So tell me what you have your eye on then, because it is the final day of spring training and the Blue Jays will be boarding a charter for Toronto this evening. What do you got your eye on down there on your final day at spring?
Yeah, well, I'm glad we didn't record yesterday morning, because if we had, then we would have been talking right. about Greg Bird again as a kind of lock for this team. We would have been definitely not talking about Gosuke Coteau. I'm pretty sure that he might have been like a mention in passing at most. Now Coteau is on the team, Greg Bird is not. So yeah, I think as the final day of spring here gets going, I'm honestly expecting it to be pretty quiet, which maybe tells you that, you know, I should brace myself for the unexpected here. But I think, you know, you're looking at a start from Alek Manoah. You're looking at a couple at-bats from the regulars. The Blue Jays don't technically have to set their roster until Thursday at noon. It looks like Zach Collins will be on the roster. So, you know, they've still got some moving pieces and they've still got some decisions to make here, especially with the bullpen. But at this point, I am kind of expecting a quiet final day of spring.
It is interesting, though, because it's like the AAA season starts today in a matter of hours. Like Buffalo has a game in less than 4 hours. So do you have like an understanding of how the Blue Jays have sort of managed that? Did they send obviously they sent a bunch of guys out to Buffalo beforehand and the Bison sort of released this partial roster the other day? Like, are more players going over there? There's some guys who are going to be in double A, but are going to, you know, fill out that triple A roster the first couple of days of the season. Like, how's that all working?
Good question. I mean, I'm not sure exactly how full that triple A roster is. Nick Allgaier is the opening day starter. Maybe they'll call on him to kind of haul some innings for the Bisons. They'll have enough arms to get by for the initial period of the season. And then from there, you kind of add on because, you know, I guess, you know, with some of the bullpen decisions, those guys wouldn't be candidates to go to triple A. Like, for example, Ryan Barucki and Nate Pearson. Pearson's not going to break with the team. Barucki probably won't, but they wouldn't go to Buffalo. They'd be on the injured list anyway. So they probably stay with the Jays or stay back in Florida. And so that would account for at least some of the decisions. But certainly a guy like Taylor Saucedo, if he's not with the Jays, you'd figure he'd be in Buffalo.
Yeah, so maybe we'll learn some things and we can kind of, you know, reverse engineer some Blue Jays roster construction later today when we see like who is and is not in Buffalo. Gosuke Coteau is not going to be in Buffalo. And, you know, as you mentioned, I mean, coming into this week, I was like, Gosuke Coteau is going to be a Buffalo Bison. I at no point, and this is a failing on my part, at no point considered him when I was projecting the Toronto Blue Jays roster. I just really didn't see him making it. And he has. And it's like quite a story. You wrote it at sportsnet.ca. Would encourage everybody to go read that. I mean, longtime minor leaguer, a former guy with a bunch of prospects shine on him. Left-handed bat, versatile defender, like gives you a pretty good plate appearance, it seems. I'm not going to profess to have watched him in the Yankees or Padres system, but pretty impressive minor league on base numbers and looks like he can draw a walk. Obviously not a ton of pop there, not a guy who's really going to drive the ball, but like, what are you expecting from him on this Blue Jays roster? Because it is a little bit of a surprise that he's going to be announced at Rogers Center on Friday night.
Oh yeah, it was a surprise to everyone, I think, including him. It was a really cool moment on Monday. He was sitting in the Blue Jays visiting clubhouse in Lakeland, and Charlie Montoyo comes up to him and says, congrats. And he was like, you're messing with me. He's like, there's no way. And Montoyo said, no, congrats, you're on the team. And so at that point, he realized this is a guy who's in his 10th professional season. He realized that he had made it. And this is someone who was close to quitting in 2014 and 15 when he had abysmal numbers in low A. And he stuck with it. So it was really, really cool moment to see that. He talked to me and Arash outside the Jay's clubhouse there. And yeah, he was like overwhelmed, totally overwhelmed, and just, you know, witnessing like the coolest moment of someone's life. It's very cool to see that. And then, yeah, like you said, like he's a good ball player.
Coteau with a deep drive out to right field. That ball's not coming back. Right into the teeth of the wind. Gosuke Coteau, a huge blast. Lands in the berm in deep right field.
The reason I thought they were going to go with Bird is because Coteau really doesn't have power, you know? So you're talking about someone who, yeah, he's a good player. He brings some versatility. He can play different infield and outfield spots, but he's not someone who really brings a lot of pop. And I thought the Jays wanted pop off the bench, but maybe they get that in Collins. So yeah, it's an interesting one.
Totally. It is related to Zach Collins. It is related to Greg Bird. So I don't know. And we'll talk about those things as well. But like with Cato, or Coteau, I should say, Gotske, as they were calling him around the batting cage when I was down there, which is a great nickname that I hope sticks for as long as he's on this roster. I mean, I think the idea is he covers so many defensive positions, right? You can stick him in outfield corner. He plays the infield. You know, he's going to make the plays that come to him. I don't know that he's going to be a spectacular five-star defender anywhere, but like he's going to give you reliable defense. So he's an option late in games. He gives you flexibility and versatility if you're Charlie Montoyo and you're pinch hitting for certain guys, or you're trying to kind of like fit guys around the diamond and thinking about your defensive lineup. Like, it does give you more flexibility that way. And like the plate appearance that he gives you, and we haven't seen him at the big league level, but just based on, you know, his AAA track record, it seems like it is a disciplined one and a discerning one, like a selective plate appearance, which is what you would ask. And like, I don't know, if we set the over under for Gosuke Coteau plate appearances in the month of April, like you might want to put that number like 14 and a half or something, right? Like, it's, you know, it's not going to be a high number.
I was thinking 15. Yeah.
15, yeah, right. So I don't know that he's going to be at the plate that much, but if he has to be, he's not going to drive the ball or strike it with a bunch of authority, but seems like he will see four or five pitches when he can, and he will make the pitcher work, and he won't be an easy out. So I do think those are probably, you know, I'm speculating, those are two of the things that the Blue Jays liked and why he's coming north.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, even for a team that already has Tapia, he's kind of a left-handed hitting guy who doesn't bring a lot of power. So now the bench has three left-handed hitters suddenly, and assuming that Collins makes the team, which that assumption might be proven wrong, but, you know, Collins, lefty bat, Tapia, and Coteau. So you've got these three guys. None of them are really proven. You know, it would be better to have Kyle Schwarber than this kind of mixed platter of outfielders and bench players. That's okay. I mean, Tapia is certainly useful. Coteau, we'll see. Collins, we'll see. But defensively, Coteau does give you some things, and he brings you a little bit more versatility than a Greg Bird would have. And as for first base, Coteau's played a little bit there, but, you know, it probably puts Biggio a bit more in that first base mix for the Jays.
So let me pitch you on my theory here. Here's my take on Zach Collins, Gosuke Coteau, Greg Bird, how this all kind of fits together. So the Blue Jays trade Reese McGuire for Zach Collins the other night. Reese McGuire, left-handed hitting backup catcher. Zach Collins, White Sox, left-handed hitting backup catcher. They were like, there were parallels to the almost to the Grichuk for Tapia trade, right? Which was outfielder for outfielder. This was catcher for catcher, somewhat similar. What I actually think that Collins replaces is not just Reese McGuire. I think Zach Collins is Reese McGuire and Greg Bird in one, while only taking one roster spot. What I mean by that is, like, he is a left-handed power bat off the bench who can draw a walk and who can hit big league pitching with really high exit velocities. So that is how he replaces Greg Bird. He's also a guy who can play catcher. So that's how he replaces Reese McGuire. So I think the Blue Jays just sort of like add a guy who does everything that McGuire and Bird were going to do for you, but he only takes up one roster spot. Now, obviously, there's a downgrade defensively there. Zach Collins, not a strong defender behind the plate. Reese McGuire's a better defender. But Collins, who has the ability to play first base, played it for a bunch of games in AAA coming up, has played it very sparingly, but has played it at the big league level. He can play first. He can play behind the plate. Left-handed power bat, disciplined off the bench. I think he's Bird and McGuire in one. I think that's the idea here.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty fair read. I mean, you look at Collins, like just offensively, he's really different than McGuire. And I didn't realize this at first because I wasn't overly familiar with Zach Collins' profile. But, you know, you start looking at it and he has higher max exit velocities than Reese McGuire, higher average exit velocities, better barrel rates. Like the results have not been good at the major league level. He's got, I think, a 6.45 OPS, something like that. But at AAA, he's hit, and the underlying major league numbers are good. So you're looking at someone who, you know, I think it's pretty fair to think that Collins could be at least a league average bat. And that's not what we would say about Reese McGuire at all. And he has an option. So he's probably going to break with the team. But if he doesn't, or if they want to trim down the roster on May 1st, then they can option him and keep him, which you couldn't have done with Reese McGuire. So, you know, that's more flexibility, more power. And then you get a defensive downgrade. So, you know, McGuire defensively, he was a good defender and he just wasn't going to give you as much offense. But what this does is it really puts Alejandro Kirk in more of an important defensive spot, where instead of being a third catcher DH, Alejandro Kirk now is someone who's really important to this team defensively.
And then by condensing Bird / McGuire into one roster spot, you open up another one where you can carry a guy like Gosuke Kato. And now you do have somebody who's a versatile defender, and you can, like, I just think the Blue Jays got more flexible and more versatile. Like, it's like Richard Fatapia. Like, I don't know that the Blue Jays got better in that trade. I don't know that they got quote unquote better in McGuire for Collins, but I think they got more versatile and more flexible. And I think that their roster makes more sense and is kind of more harmonious and everything's more complementary. I think that's kind of the idea behind both of those sort of edge of the roster plays.
Yeah, it gives them kind of an interesting bench. For a while, there was that uncertainty as to how it was going to play out. Now we have a pretty good idea as to what that's going to look like. And the bench now has some different ways that you can use it with the multi-positions, with, you know, three lefty hitters potentially on the bench. So gives them a different look. I think too, I was thinking, like, who else would have been a candidate, right? Like, let's say they hadn't gone with Kato.
Yeah.
You know, probably Nathan Lucas would have been next. So it does, to me, underscore a little bit that they have an amazing position player core. It's the core of this team. It's the reason that they enter the season as one of the best teams in baseball. But beyond that, it's like there's not necessarily, you know, in the absence of a Moreno who's pushing or a Martinez who's, you know, potentially coming close, there's not really someone who's on the cusp right now as far as prospects. And that's what opens the door for someone like a Kato.
Let me double back to what you said earlier. Would you rate Alejandro Kirk as a better defensive catcher than Zach Collins?
Yeah.
So yeah. What a thing to say.
Yeah.
Where Alejandro Kirk is now being relied on for his defense. Does that speak to, you think, the Blue Jays just deprioritizing the, you know, the importance of defense on their roster and just like prioritizing getting the left-handed power off the bench and going bat first all over the place? Or do you think that speaks to the Blue Jays' faith in the improvements that Alejandro Kirk has made defensively and their increased trust in him at a very young age, still at the big league level, being able to game call and receive and block and do all the things that a big league catcher needs to do to keep runs off the board?
Probably some of both. You know, really, I think that with Kirk's development, he's developed familiarity with the pitchers. He's certainly worked hard. He wants to catch, as he told us on ATL, I guess it was last week. So there's some development there. And at the same time, this is a team that needs to prioritize offense. You know, Kirk's a great bat. You want him in the lineup. And this is a way to do that. It also reflects faith, I think, in Danny Jansen and his ability to really shoulder a big load. And it's also not a coincidence that this would happen at a time that Gabriel Moreno is so close to the majors. Because, you know, if Kirk is in this role as the club's number two defensive catcher for 4 months, that's okay. And then if Moreno's up at the end of the season, or even if it's 1 year that Kirk is that secondary defensive catcher, you can live with it. And then long term, you have probably Moreno as your number one with Jansen as a 1A, or, you know, you see how that plays out. But certainly Moreno has the chance to put himself really prominently in that mix.
Yeah, it's just going to be interesting to see how the playing time plays out, because I assume Alejandro Kirk's still going to get some DH at bats. Like, I don't think Alejandro Kirk's best utility on this team is sitting on the bench and not being in this lineup hitting. So, you know, Danny Jansen's going to be catching Hyunjin Ryu. I imagine he's going to be catching Jose Berrios on opening day. Kind of talked to Charlie about this a couple times when I was down there, and he was saying, yeah, we're not really looking to match Kirk up with anybody in particular like we did last year with Robbie Ray. We'll see. Sometimes things that are said in spring training don't always come true in the regular season. So maybe Kirk ends up catching every Manoa outing, or maybe Kevin Gausman, you know, who is, again, a two-pitch guy, like pretty straightforward game plan. Like, Kirk working with Ray and, you know, a two-pitch approach worked pretty well last year. I wonder if they try to match him up with Gausman again this year. But I mean, how do you what do you think the disparity there is for Kirk between DH playing time, who he's catching in the rotation, and then, like, obviously that will impact Danny Jansen's playing time as well. Like, it's kind of, it's sneakily become one of the more intriguing things for me this season, is just how the sort of the plate appearances and the playing time is going to be divvied up behind the plate, and then DH at bats as well for Kirk.
Yeah, I guess to figure that out, I would probably start with catcher and think, okay, how many games do you want Jansen catching? And he wants to catch 120. He's caught 107 before. Like, that's his career high. If I'm the Jays, I probably want around 110, you know, about two-thirds of the games. So that leaves, you know, let's say Collins is an occasional catcher as well, but let's say most of those other ones go to Kirk. So let's say Kirk catches 50 games. Then I'm probably thinking that he can DH for another 80. Like, I think he can DH half the team's games. So that gets him into 130 games as a starter. You know, give him some rest days in there. He's not a guy who's, you know, if he's a catcher who's built the way he is, he's probably not playing 162. So you get 130, 140 from him, you're happy. He's going to hit. So I think he's going to earn those at-bats. He always has hit. And I think that, you know, if you get 130 total from Kirk, that leaves 80 games at DH for other guys. That's kind of how I see it at this point.
Yeah, I want Kirk's bat in the lineup as often as possible.
Swing it and drive. Get out, ball. Get out of here. And gone. How about that? Alejandro Kirk, a two-strike home run. Third home run for the Blue Jays this spring.
And then, yeah, the other thing is, like, look, Gabriel Moreno goes to Buffalo and looks like he did in 2021 and carries over the results he had in New Hampshire to Buffalo. That guy's a big leaguer by summer. And so there's another layer to this. Like, there's another wrinkle, and obviously you gain the option with Collins, so then, yeah, you can just option Collins down, and now you got Collins and Kellen Deglin catching at Buffalo. You got at least some sort of veteran minor leaguer like depth there in case you run into injury issues. And yeah, watch, it's going to be April 25th and, like, both Jansen and Kirk will be on the IL, and this will all be, you know, why, what were we even talking about? But like, yeah. The Moreno thing will be interesting as well. If that guy's ready in June or July, Jansen's healthy and playing, Kirk's performing, all of a sudden you've got a whole nother dilemma on your hands.
Oh, for sure. I mean, that would be a great problem. I think the Jays are hoping that that is the way things unfold.
A good dilemma, yeah.
Well, it would be, yeah, for sure. Yeah, for now, you've got three of them. I think, you know, to make that defense for offense switch, McGuire to Collins, I think it's interesting. On the surface of it, I'm more intrigued by Collins, and especially because he has the option, he has the offensive ability for a team that's already deep in catching to move a bit away from that, especially when your number one guy is very good defensively in Jansen. So I think it makes sense. One little wrinkle in this that I still kind of wonder about is how well the Jays are going to throw. Like, their catchers are going to work with the running game. Last year, you know, with guys like Robbie Ray, that was a weakness. We'll see how the pitchers, you know, work on that front. We'll see how Jansen's kind of improved. My suspicion is that other teams are going to run on the Blue Jays and try to steal. That's something I'll be watching in the first few weeks of the year.
Oh, and that's something that'll be interesting to learn about Kevin Gausman and Yusei Kikuchi, just having not watched them as closely, like how well they hold on runners. Because, like, a lot of catchers will tell you, like, the pitcher's time to the plate has a lot to do with the math of stealing bases. So just, like, watching how those guys control the game and vary their times to the plate, and, you know, the little intricacies that go into a pitcher holding a runner. Moreno has really strong pop times for what it's worth in the minors to this point. So he's been, you know, really good at throwing out runners. So that'll be a plus. But yeah, it's something to watch with Kirk in particular this year, especially if he's going to be seeing more time behind the plate. Let's talk quickly about the bullpen, because that's where there's also some fluidity right now as spring training comes to a close. Little injuries picked up by Jordan Romano, Nate Pearson, and Ryan Barucki. What can you tell us about those three guys? Who's coming north? Who's likely to open the year on the IL? And what kind of opportunities is this creating?
Yeah, so good news for the Blue Jays that, at least in the case of Romano, he's okay. So he was throwing a bullpen the other day, throwing really hard. The normal velocity that you'd see from him, the slider movement was there. So that's a good sign for the Jays. His command was off, and he went out and pitched in a minor league game afterwards. Wasn't locating well. So, you know, you wonder if he's going to get another chance to kind of zone in a little bit and find that command and find that release point. So that's one variable to watch, but he'll break with the team. So that's good news. Pearson will not. He's still sick. It's not COVID, but it's something. And so that's preventing him from doing the same thing and getting those reps in to build up his command. So he's on the sidelines, which is far from ideal. And then with Barucki, he's got a bit of a hamstring issue, hamstring tightness right now. And it's not clear exactly where things are going to land there. But if I had to guess, I would say he probably opens on the injured list. But that is still up for discussion right now.
So those two open on the IL, and we're working with a 10-man bullpen. So we got Romano, Jimmy Garcia, Tim Mayza, Adam Simber, Trevor Richards, David Phelps, Ross Stripling. Let's throw Julian Merriweather in there, right? So that's eight. So that leaves two, and it could have been like a Barucki Pearson. Now you don't have those two. I would say, and I've been talking about Taylor Saucedo all spring, that Taylor Saucedo has, like, on merit earned a job in this bullpen. Forget about, like, injury replacement. Like, Taylor Saucedo has looked terrific this spring, has come in and thrown the ball really, really well against a high caliber of hitting and is flashing some really promising stuff. So, I mean, he would be a pretty easy replacement for the out of options Ryan Barucki on this roster. If Barucki's starting on the IL, you move that lefty in there. But even just on pure merit, I think Taylor Saucedo belongs in this bullpen. And then number 10, is it just kind of like Trent Thornton by default?
Yeah.
Is there anybody else that you see who might factor in there?
You know, I view it similarly. I think that, Barucki or Saucedo, you know, it could be one of those guys. And Saucedo really has had a good spring up until his last outing. But even then, you know, afterwards, Montoya was pretty high on how he had done. So I think that makes sense. And for the other spot, I think that there's a door open for Trent Thornton. He didn't pitch well Monday in his most recent spring outing, but I think the door is open there for him to potentially break with this team. And he's really hoping to, obviously, as all these guys are. It's a stressful time for them. So they're trying to find out if they've made the team or not, of course. But I think there's a chance they optioned Castro. Not that they couldn't recall him, but they optioned Castro. So seemingly Thornton has a chance here.
Well, I was thinking about Vasquez as well, and he also got optioned. And again, you could recall him, like you already used the options. So I think, probably Thornton for bulk reasons, I think, you know, like just because you can get a bit of an extended outing out of him, and you're going to want bulk guys around early in April as you take on this like crazy schedule and starters aren't that built up, and like crazy stuff happens in April baseball games too, as we all know, with weather and everything. So I think that just as an insurance policy, like Trent Thornton, just in the length that he can give you, probably comes north of this team. It'll be interesting to see the results. I know he's been kind of like working to pare down his arsenal, which is like a bit of an annual story with him, because there's been times, particularly when he was a starter, where he's like, you know, flipping up like seven pitches. It's great, right? Like they all move in different directions and they have all got like, you know, really strong spin rates. But I do wonder if the Blue Jays have, you know, feel like he could benefit from just focusing on, you know, maybe just three or four pitches, Trent. And he's not really in between anymore, where it's like, you're sort of a starter, you're sort of a reliever, like you're a swingman. Like I think he's just a reliever now. So he can pare that down and focus on those pitches and the sequences that he's going to use to get nine hitters out one trip through, not two or three trips through where he has to think about different ways to set up and attack guys. So it'll be kind of interesting to see what kind of spots they find for him. But I think that just because of the length he gives you, Trent Thornton is the guy for that 10th spot in the bullpen.
Yeah, I think that would make sense. And I mean, with the exception of Pearson and potentially Barucki, they've gotten through, seemingly, with one game to go, they've gotten through this spring with, you know, limited injuries, you know, and that's a good place to be, both on the position player front and on the pitcher front. I would have guessed normally, you know, you see injuries in spring. And so they've gotten through this condensed spring in a good spot. I know, Arden, like, I could be jinxing it right here, but, you know, they're emerging in a good spot.
Ben, there's tempting fate, and then there's saying what you just said here at 9:30 a.m. on the final day of spring. All right. Yeah. That's a whole nother ball game that you've just entered us into. So I can only imagine what type of fate awaits the Blue Jays later today, but we'll be here to talk about it at some point for sure. Let's step away. But when we come back, we got to talk about Charlie Montoyo's extension, and we got to talk about, you know, just round up some other things here on the final day, spring training opening day coming up on Friday. Can't wait. More at the letters after this. Talk to you then. It continues on At the Letters. Arden Zwelling, Ben Nicholson-Smith. Thanks as always to our producers, Christian Ryan and Nick Andrade, who are doing real heavy lifting this week, let me tell you, because we are having like a classic spring training recording morning here on Tuesday, April 5th, where we recorded part of this at 9 a.m. and then Ben had to run off to the ballpark and then news happened. And, you know, usually it takes like at least 12 to 24 hours for the things that we talk about in the podcast to become outdated by news. Today it took like, I don't know, 12 to 24 minutes because we've had roster news just in the time that we've been recording this. And by the way, Ben's been kind enough to join us from the ballpark in Dunedin, where the Blue Jays are about to wrap up their spring training schedule. He's running all over the place right now, so if his audio sounds a little bit different here in the second half than in the first half, that's why. But Ben, you're on the ground, you're in Dunedin, you're talking to Charlie Montoyo. So just tell us what we've learned about some of those final spots in the bullpen on the Blue Jays roster and maybe some players who might be starting the year on the IL.
Well, it turns out our guesses weren't so bad in the end. Taylor Saucedo and Trent Thornton guesses have kind of come to fruition here. Both of those guys are on the team. They've been told that they'll be breaking camp with the Jays, and Julian Merriweather as well has a spot in that bullpen. So we have a much clearer sense of what the bullpen looks like now. Of course, the bench has taken shape, as we talked about earlier this morning. But yeah, now we've got a few more pieces to that picture coming together right now, and it's a little easier to envision what this team will look like on opening day.
So my argument was that like Taylor Saucedo has just straight up earned this on merit. He's looked great this spring, and I know the results weren't that fantastic the last time out, but I think the process has been really strong for him. Blue Jays feel really good about how he's throwing the ball. And then for Trent Thornton, my argument was, well, they're going to need a bulk guy. They're going to need somebody who can cover some innings, likely in lower leverage spots. Like somebody's got to pitch in blowouts, and Trent Thornton can kind of come in and mop up some of those outs. Do you think that's kind of the rationale between those two guys making the roster?
Yeah, I think so. And you know, with Thornton, he's someone who can give you a couple innings. You know, probably, let's be realistic here, he's probably pitching low leverage, down 7-1, up 7-1.
Yeah,
you know, that's probably when we see him to begin. But you know, they've also got Ross Stripling stretched out, and he's really fully stretched out now. So they've talked internally a little bit about potentially mixing him in as a spot starter, just to kind of give the other guys a breather if they need one at some point in the month of April as they play so many games. So yeah, that's an interesting one with Thornton, but he can be someone who does give them that multiple inning look.
Yeah, the Blue Jays, they start off with 10 games in a row, and then they have an off day on April 18th, and then they got 20 in a row. I would bet Ross Stripling's made a start by that off day. You with me on that?
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, he's fully stretched out. He's done it before. You know, you also want to pick your spots to shield the Blue Jays' best pitchers and use them strategically. So, you know, of course, when the games count, you are going to want your best pitchers going up against the best teams. So maybe there's a time in there, I don't know, like, is it as soon as Oakland? Probably not as soon as Oakland, but you could look for a little weak spot on the schedule, put Stripling in there, and then have your main starters going against the bigger teams, the tougher teams. Because, you know, here in spring, it's been kind of interesting to note that whenever the Blue Jays are facing the Yankees, it's always like a Nick Allgaier start, right? Like, it's not their big
Anderson.
Guns. So yeah, Sean Anderson's seen a lot of the Yankees this spring. So, you know, I think that, you know, maybe Stripling could be used strategically. We'll see how it goes. It could just come down to workload, but those are some of the factors that they'll look at.
Yeah, I think about the way that Stripling pitches as well. I'd probably prefer him at Rogers Center than I would to him at Yankee Stadium, just thinking about environment. But, you know, you can only get so cute. With Nate Pearson, so a mono diagnosis, Charlie Montoyo, quote, he'll be out a while. What do you think a while means for Nate Pearson? Are we thinking a week, 2 weeks, a month? Or is it even just impossible to say right now?
I would think more than a week. They're not going to sit here and say he's out for a month. I won't be surprised if it's, you know, a few weeks. Like, I think at this rate, he probably needs another week or 10 days just to recover based on the information that we have here. And so at that point, you've got to start building up and you've got to start finding that zone. So, you know, if he pitches for the Blue Jays in the month of April, I think that's probably a success for them at this point.
Man, because it could be one of those things, we've seen it before, where guys get disrupted as they're building up in spring training and they have to go back to square one to build up again. And like, I don't know if that'll be the case here. Maybe Nate Pearson will only take a step or two back and will be able to resume his progression. But yeah, if he has to start over from scratch and building up for the season again, that's a big blow for Nate Pearson. And that's something that could sideline him, like you said, I mean, into the month of May.
Yeah, I think that's a possibility. And I mean, this is someone whose development has been stalled before because of stuff like this. Like, he's run into various setbacks. And of course, in the moment, that means the Blue Jays are without a pitcher whose arm is really lively. And then beyond that, it's just the missed repetitions, the missed chances to develop and refine that command, because, you know, to this point, his command hasn't been good enough at the major league level. And he needs reps to be able to change that.
Yeah, this is just a brutal development for Nate Pearson and for the Blue Jays. You know, the only people who, you know, benefit from this would be like your Taylor Saucedos and Trent Thorntons who get roster spots. But yeah, this is not good news at all. So we'll kind of obviously be following this throughout the month of April. Did want to mention here quickly, just because we haven't recorded since this happened, and it is notable whenever a manager gets a guarantee. Charlie Montoyo's contract was extended recently, guaranteed him the 2023 season, so that's next season, obviously. So two seasons guaranteed, and then there are options for 24 and 25. I mean, Ben, you were down there when this happened. I think that it was sorted out quite a while ago and then just sort of announced or came out this week. So I think Charlie Montoyo's known this for some time, but I mean, what do you think this extended guarantee means for Charlie? What do you think it means for the Blue Jays going forward?
Yeah, I think for Montoyo, for any manager, when you get some extra security and extra guarantee, I mean, these jobs are tough, as you know, obviously we see this firsthand, Arden, like the hours they put in, the lack of job security they have, the pressure. It's a cool job. There are only 30 of them, and there are a lot of people who would love to do it, but it doesn't make it an easy job. And so, you know, for Montoyo, a baseball lifer who, you know, made it to the major leagues kind of briefly and you know, had a brief time in the show, and then has had a long coaching career to not only make it and become a major league manager, but then to get an extension with a really good team. It's a cool moment for him, for sure, and for his family to have that kind of certainty and stability moving forward. You know, at the same time, it's not a 6-year deal. You know, it's not a 5-year deal. And managers in this era probably don't get that much certainty. Like, even a Buck Showalter, I don't have it in front of me, but I'm presuming he probably signed a 3-year deal with the Mets. And that's a guy who'd be on the high end of experience and status and pay for managers. Charlie Montoyo, not there yet, but, you know, he gets a little bit more stability. And now the pressure's on, because if the Blue Jays don't make the playoffs this year, there will be questions asked. I mean, he needs to deliver, and he should have every resource to deliver, but he has to live up to that expectation now, that he has that extension and such a good team in front of him.
He is, in a funny way, getting up there a little bit in tenure, right? Like, he was that year when Baldelli got hired, and I think David Bell was that offseason as well. I mean, since then, I mean, we've seen, you know, Girardi's come back into the game. Gabe Kapler has changed jobs. You mentioned Showalter coming back. Bob Melvin has moved jobs. Tony La Russa came back in this game. AJ Hinch, Alex Cora. I mean, there's been a lot of managerial movement since that time, and Charlie has kind of stuck it out. Like, if anything, I think it absolutely speaks to the satisfaction the Blue Jays have with, like, with the job that he's doing. Like, managers get nitpicked to death these days, which is, like, kind of the role in a way, right? Like, you are the guy who has to wear the success or the failure of a game, like, 10 minutes after it's completed every single night. So I promise you, Kevin Cash is getting nitpicked to death. And, like, it doesn't matter who's, you know, who, Mike Scioscia, Bruce Bochy, like, pick your guy. Like, Connie Mack would be getting nitpicked to death. Like, that's just kind of part of, like, what happens. If you're following your team closely enough as a fan, you're going to find reasons to question the manager. But you kind of alluded to this a little bit. Like, it's so hard even for us to evaluate managers because the role goes so far beyond what we see on television for 3 hours every night. Like, I would say, just pull a number out of my head, that's like 10 to 15% of the role. And then there is, like, 85 to 90% that happens behind closed doors in how you manage up to the front office and down to your players and how you deal with personalities and egos and juggle all these variables of health and playing time and performance and, like, fielding the best lineups possible every night and making the best decisions. Like, I just do think it is kind of impossible for us to truly evaluate a manager from the outside. But I do think that this move from the Blue Jays very much does signal that they are very pleased with the job that Charlie is doing when it comes to, fostering the environment in which players feel comfortable and confident and capable to perform at their best.
Yeah, I think it's hard at the best of times to evaluate that. And, you know, after 2 years of really not being around the team as much because of obvious reasons, because of COVID, not being in clubhouses for 2020 or 2021, it becomes even harder to evaluate that. And so to be around the team again, as I know you experienced when you were down here, Arden, like, you do get some more insight into, you know, how these interactions go. You can actually see them unfolding. Like, yesterday, I mentioned earlier, and we were talking about Coteau and how Charlie was just so excited to be able to tell him that, and how Coteau was really moved by that moment. I mean, that's the kind of thing that, you know, Charlie Montoya is really good at, because he truly does root for his players. He truly does have their backs, and he wants to see them succeed. So that's step one. Of course, there are a lot of things that a manager has to do, and tactically speaking, he's made mistakes and probably will continue to, because, you know, it's 162 game season. Like, not a lot of perfect scorecards out there on managers, like you said. So, you know, to me, he's certainly earned the chance to continue with this team. If they have a great year, then this could be the beginning of, you know, something really cool with this organization that lasts a long time. And if they don't make the playoffs, then things could turn in a different direction, because there's only, you know, I was thinking about this morning, but, you know, you look at this core, you look at this team, it's such a good team as they enter 2022. And, you know, there can almost be this temptation sometimes to say, well, you know, it's going to last. It's going to be here forever. And hopefully for Blue Jays fans, that's the case. But you just never know. Like, this is each season, each chance you have with a group this talented and this healthy, like, they don't come along very often. They really are precious opportunities. And so the Jays really do have to make the most of this. It's not to say that it's a one-year window, but it's hard to imagine a better set of circumstances than this. And a manager in that position needs to take advantage of it.
Yeah, just to build off of what you're saying, like, there is no questioning as a player that Charlie Montoya has your back. Like, you can ask Tyler Chatwood about that, right? And sometimes that cuts in the opposite direction as well. And sometimes that loyalty can be to, like, the detriment of the team. Like, you think about what happened with Tyler Chatwood not having someone warming up behind him last year when he was going through his struggles because Charlie didn't want him looking over his shoulder. That ended up biting the Blue Jays, right? So that can certainly cut both ways. But I think there's a real benefit when players know that, like, the manager is rooting for them and in their corner and has a real belief in them. Like, I think that Charlie is a really strong communicator with his players and with his coaching staff as well, which is, like, a rather robust one this year. So it's, like, a lot of different people to have to be back and forth with throughout the course of your day as a manager. But, like, I think Charlie builds really strong bonds with the people that he works with the players that he's working with. Like, there's no question about Charlie's dedication to them and his dedication to the job too. You think about you think about his son, Alex, who was born with a congenital heart defect. I mean, Charlie, you know, has not been seeing his son or his family for months at a time because of the pandemic and because of COVID-19, and obviously not wanting his son to get the virus. So, you know, like, Charlie has sacrificed a ton over the last couple of years for this job, for the Blue Jays, for baseball, for the game itself, right? So, like, I just think that as a player, you feel really comfortable with Charlie as your manager. You feel really supported, and you feel like you know where you stand. And you feel like Charlie's such a good communicator with them. It's funny, like, because I would actually criticize Charlie for the way that he communicates with us publicly. Like, I don't think he's ever been comfortable with the forward-facing White House press secretary style part of the job. Like, I just don't think that's a strength of him. It's being that,
right, he's a baseball guy. He's not out there trying to be a White House press secretary.
Right. Like, that's the spokesperson part of the job is a weakness of his. And I think communicating publicly is not his strength, but I think communicating internally to his players and building bonds and trust and respect and faith is huge. And I don't know that you can quantify this or put a number on it, but I would think that there is some sort of an impact on performance on a nightly basis when players feel supported and comfortable, and like their boss has their back. Like, can't everybody relate to that? When, you know, if you feel like your boss doesn't like you or doesn't have your back, how are you going to perform in the workplace, right? So I think there is something to that. One thing that Charlie said the other day was that Vladimir Guerrero Jr. could be a 30-30 guy if he wanted to. And watching Vlad just running the bases like a maniac this spring, stealing bases, you know, diving in head first all over the place, his batting helmet's flying off, dreadlocks flapping behind him in the wind, is fun, man. This is cool watching the way this guy's running the bases in spring training. Is this something you expect to see more of this year? Is Vladimir Guerrero Jr. going to be pushing the issue with his legs a little bit more in 2022 than we've seen in recent years?
He says he's feeling fast, and he looks fast. I mean, yeah, you know, 30-30, I don't think he could do it. Maybe he could. It's not going to happen. I think 40-10, as Montoyo said, maybe. I see Vladdy as more like a 7-8 steal guy. I mean, we'll see. But I do think that we're going to see more aggressiveness from him on the bases, because at least for now, when he's feeling really good, he's moving well, and he loves being aggressive. He loves trying to make that big play and slide in there, and he'll run through stop signs at times, and he clearly has fun doing it, and he can move pretty quick when he gets going. So I definitely think we'll see that. And I mean, even as soon as opening weekend, I bet there's a play. Here's a prediction that, and by the way, we will have our over-unders later for anyone wondering about that. So we certainly have not forgotten. But a prediction for opening weekend, we will see in the first three games of the season, Vlad Jr. try to steal a base or stretch a double into a triple. Like, he is going to be really excited in front of those fans, and I think he's going to try to show off his
moves. Back at Bo, and he's running. Heel steps off and throws it into foul territory. Bichette in to score. Guerrero around third, running through the stop sign and safe at the plate as the throw gets away from the catcher.
It's funny, man, because like it reminds me of what people always said to me about Vlad when he was in the minors and he was coming up through the Blue Jay system was, man, this guy is athletic. Like, this guy's an athlete. And then I would look at him and I would kind of like shake my head and be like, what the hell are you talking about? And that's like, that's a shortcoming on my part. Like, that's a misunderstanding on my part, because like, I kind of understand now athleticism is independent of body composition. Like, we've had, I think it was Andrew Tanish was on the podcast with us saying like, man, Alejandro Kirk's a great athlete. And you look at Alejandro Kirk and you look at the body composition, you say, this isn't what you picture in your head when you think of an athlete, but the athleticism's in Kirk's hips. Like, it's in his balance at the plate and his rhythm and his gravity. Same thing with Vlad. Like, Vlad's athleticism for a guy who just has not had like the prototypical athlete's body, it's his coordination. And it's in his quick twitch and his bat speed, like his ability to generate force and transfer that power explosively through his swing to produce league high exit velocities, to hit the ball as hard as anybody in baseball. Like, I think you see that the same way on the base pass, because when he is running the bases, like, he's not out of control and he's not falling all over himself and like spraining both of his ankles. Like, everything is coordinated and everything does make sense and everything looks athletic. So, like, yeah, I think Vlad could steal more bases. Like, stealing bases is math, right? It's your time from first to second base versus the pitcher's time to home plate and the catcher's pop time. So if your time's shorter, you're going to steal bases if you have the conviction to, and you're running without fear and you're getting like the, you know, the right read on the jump. So, like, yeah, why can't Vlad steal bases? And particularly if, like, by the way, you know, some word around camp has been that Vlad's around 235 pounds, like, which is significantly less than he's been in recent seasons. But I, like, vividly remember somebody who would know with the Blue Jays telling me, like, look, if Vlad ever gets down to 235, and we were having this conversation when Vlad was not in the best shape, and he said to me, if Vlad ever gets down to 235, like, watch out, because that's a really great weight for him. And that's a point where he could really unlock some things in his game. And it seems like, and you alluded to this as well, that Vlad's like conditioning has taken another jump over the offseason, and that he is feeling fast and he is feeling explosive. And that can only be a dangerous thing coming off the season he just had.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a good way to start the season. I think, you know, if I'm the Jays, I probably don't want Vladdy trying to steal 30 bases. Like, I'd take 10. I don't want him trying to steal 30. But, it, you know, it gets to a really interesting discussion. I've been asking a lot of players and coaches about this down here, basically looking at trying to get through 162 healthy, strong enough to make the playoffs, but also strong enough to actually perform well when you're in the playoffs. And that has to be the way the Blue Jays approach this. It can't just be, hey, let's try to scrape in at all costs. You have to prepare yourself for that seventh month of the season. And, you know, in talking to Vladdy, he says he wants to play 162. Bo, he says, there will be no load management for me. Talking to George Springer, he's really determined to play more than he did, especially after last year. I mean, you can just tell talking to him that it weighed on him to not be able to play more than, I think it was 78 games. So the Jays need to get more out of him. Danny Jansen, he's determined to play more than he did. And, you know, with Reese McGuire out of the equation, Jansen, you know, really clearly someone they're relying a lot on out of the gate. So, you know, organization-wide, this is a really important question for the Blue Jays of basically how much they push these guys, how hard they push these guys, and when they choose to give them rest. And, you know, Arden, as you know, like, they look at this stuff through, you know, the human lens of things. As Charlie Montoyo says, I mean, they're not machines, they're human beings, but they also look at it through stuff like, how often are they reaching max sprint speed? How many ups and downs? How many times are they stopping and starting? And so you gather that data and try to create an overall, you know, decision, an overall direction for how often you're going to play these guys and when they do want rest. But, you know, it's an interesting line they're walking, because if Bo Bichette says he wants to play 162, honestly, I would let him. But if someone like, you know, with Vlad or Springer, like with Springer especially, like, I think you have to give him rest. So it's a real interesting kind of dilemma and push-pull that the Jays are engaged on as they open the season here.
Well, and it's an evolving science, I think. It's an evolving sports science, right? Because if you really just looked at it objectively for a ball player in the middle of July who's been playing every day, and you just looked at their fatigue and their, you know, workload and like how, you know, their force production versus where it was earlier in the season, everything is going to be flashing red at you that this guy needs time off because he's been playing baseball every day for months. Like, what these guys do is not in the best interests of performance, really, right? So it's like, how do you kind of walk that line? Like, how do you get the best possible performance out of players who are in these circumstances that are constantly working against them? And it's not just the grind of like playing 9 innings every single night. It's the travel, right? And it's flights from coast to coast overnight. And it's not sleeping in your own bed. It's not sleeping well at all. And it's not getting those opportunities for recovery. It's landing in another city at 3 a.m. and you haven't really eaten enough protein and carbohydrates after the game in order to give your body what it needs to rebuild muscle tissue and replenish glycogen. And now it's 3 a.m. and you're like, well, what are my food options right now? Like, none of it is ideal and none of it's the way you draw it up. The best way to kind of let your body relax and your muscles heal isn't to like sit upright in a tight plane seat on a charter. Not all these things are working against the Blue Jays, and it's going to be up to everybody in the performance department to try to understand those rigors of a baseball season and find like the optimal way to keep guys in the best shape possible. And then you're also dealing with the subjective feedback that you're mentioning from players like Bo Bichette, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., who are like, "Nah, I'm playing every day. This is what I'm doing. Like, A, this is how it's always been, and I have these like old school intrinsic baseball ideologies. But B, I need to play every day to put up numbers for my arbitration case. Like, you're not holding me out of the lineup. Like, I need to go get them ribbies. Like, I need to go get those hits. Like, I know it sounds selfish, but like that is part of the equation as well, as is, hey, I'm Bo Bichette, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. I'm one of the best young players in the game. I need to be in this lineup helping my team win so we can achieve our ultimate goal of going to the postseason and win the World Series." Like, there are just so many variables at play here when it comes to managing workload and fatigue and volume throughout an MLB season. I think every team in the league is still like, it's an evolving thing. It's still trying to find the best way to manage all that. Kind of sounds like you've had some discussions with Blue Jays people about how they might try to do it this season. I kind of question whether it can be, you know, done perfectly anywhere at all.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's definitely, I mean, we saw that with Springer. Like, you can go into the season, and last year they had all this sports science too, and they had these great intentions, and they had all these good plans, and it just doesn't work sometimes. Like, you can try your best, and you can have everything in place and these talented players, but you still need some things to go your way. And I think, you know, in talking to John Schneider about it, Blue Jays bench coach, you know, he's someone who looks really closely at this stuff for Vladdy and Bo, who he's known forever, and for, you know, the catchers who he works with closely. So he's a really important part of this whole process for the Jays. And he kind of compared Bo and Vladdy to Ferraris. And he's like, you know, these guys are like the premium parts of this organization. We got to make sure when we know it's time to tune them up and when it's time to let them out of the garage. And, you know, to build on that analogy, I think they're going to be out of the garage a lot. I think they're going to be playing basically every day. And, you know, it's going to take something more than like a little dent for Bo Bichette to be out of the lineup. But, you know, at the same time, they need to be, it's not just about next week's games against the Rangers, right? Like, that's going to go in the rearview mirror so fast. And this team, like, they have the talent to win the World Series, so their goal should be to win the World Series, and you got to play the long game. And so if I'm the Jays, my target for Bo and Vlad would be like 155. My target for Springer would be like 145. And if they end up playing a bit more than that, then that's probably a bonus.
Yeah, and if you end up playing a lot more than that in October, then you've probably done a good job of keeping those guys, keeping those Ferraris well-tuned. Ben, you are a Ferrari down there at spring training, pumping out content for Sportsnet, so we want to go let you fuel up a little bit as we close in on first pitch for the final game of the spring schedule here on Tuesday, man. But enjoy it. Read Ben's work on workload at sportsnet.ca. And any parting thoughts before we go?
Well, I would say I'm more of like a Chevy than a Ferrari, you know, trying to get the job done. I can get you from point A to point B, but no, Vlad and Bo, I mean, that's another level. But yeah, it's been fun down here. It did go quickly. But yeah, it's going to be fun to see these players play some games that actually count. Excited for the season ahead, and thanks to everyone for listening as we get started again.
No doubt, opening day right around the corner on Friday. Plenty of ATL stuff coming your way. Maybe some video stuff coming out this week and over the next couple of weeks from what Ben and I gathered down there in Florida. Excited for everybody to see that. And of course, you're going to have ATL every week throughout the regular season. So Blue Jays get things kicked off here Friday night at Rogers Center. But that's going to be it for us. Want to thank our producers, Nick Andrade and Christian Ryan. Want to thank all of you for listening. As always, he's Ben. I'm Arden. Talk to you next time on At the Letters.